Welcome to the Lesbo and the Bean universe. Lesbo and the Bean. LATB. Lat B. Where mixed martial arts and the UFC get silly. Big silly. Buckle up and move your tray tables to their upright position. And please, somebody shut that baby up. It's time for Lesbo and the Bean.
Welcome back. Episode 113. Feeling lean and mean.
Americans to steal and sex appeal.
So we have a funky fight card coming out of Singapore. We got a heavy duty breakdown on the way. Before all that though, we had a falling out of the ages. Antonia! We didn't get to see her fight this Tuesday on the Dana White Contender Series. I know we got to catch a couple fights and unprecedented, four fighters got a contract. There was also five finishes throughout the night. A lot of devastating stuff. What was your favorite finish of that entire night on the Tuesday night contender series?
I don't even know any of their names.
Oh, well, I'm thinking more of the knockout because I barely tell you the names.
I like there was, he was kind of a doughy guy. And he got hit and he fell over at the waist and just boop.
The guy with the Mexican looking guy with tattoos. I think it was Hernandez.
See, I'm so horrible. I half paid attention. I need the sound on. I never thought I needed the sound on before. Uh-huh. But
so Michael Bisping actually was announcing for the first time because he is not getting picked up with the ESPN deal.
Second time. Right?
For the Contender Series, no, this was his...
Unless, didn't he do it last week, too?
I don't know, actually.
I think so, but maybe he didn't. Maybe he just signed on to be the
He's taking the Paul Felder route. He's taking all these other guys. As much as the UFC is showing that they got the fighters, they're making headway with their commentators by giving them rounds. I was thinking about this business-wise, and the Contender Series is so smart. How do you get UFC-caliber-esque fighters to fight their heart out and not have to pay them? You don't, what do you pay them? $1,000 and the opportunity. If they were in the UFC, it's a guaranteed, and you have to give them health insurance, right? No health insurance, none of them. I'm sure they take care of them to an extent, but it's no benefits.
Do you think it will slowly create gimmicks? Because the guys don't get mic time necessarily, they get their little workup, you know, they show their little workup thing. But do you think it'll create the walkout where they're going to have masks on eventually and capes and things of that nature to try to create a character that's just as appealing to get Dana's eye?
I don't think that's going to happen right now because the Reebok deal won't allow them to wear capes or anything else that allows sponsoring. And it all depends on whether WME allows the fighters to pick up their own sponsors and or wear what they want, which I'm all for. Here at Lat B, we're all for that. But that contract is running out very quickly, and soon we're going to find out. All the fighters want, of course, individual sponsors, but until then, no, they're not going to be able to wear capes. I wish they can wear a flag as a cape right now.
Huh. Hmm.
And or if it's cleared, right, they can have, because the turban for Boulard was allowed, and
would you
then
wear
Habib,
a flag?
The Habib hat is allowed.
Would you wear a flag?
Only if it was Tito Ortiz style.
What's that?
American and Mexican flag.
Oh, I was thinking like that's Tony Ferguson style where he has the half flag.
I wouldn't put it in half. I'd put them both on the same pole with the American
one. What about this?
Higher. It'll be higher for the American one.
Yeah, well, you're American.
I am American.
Yeah, your heritage is Mexican.
Exactly.
But what about this? A red, white, and blue stars and stripes luchador mask.
I love it, and I love the luchador mask in general, but if it's me being nitpicky or anything, but to have the American flag represented on something other than the flag itself, and then you can't wear it as clothing, it's not deemed right. But just red, white, and blue, if it's not a flag cut
that's
up in
religious.
A mask, yeah, right?
Yeah, that's your Jesus Christ worship.
it's my flag worship.
Yeah.
It was instilled into me by some pretty good instillers, and I need to get away from it.
Conditioned.
It was conditioned. They did 13 weeks of heavy duty. But as a child, I remember having to do the stand and the Pledge of Allegiance, and before basketball games or wrestling matches, we all stand towards the flag and listen to the music. We all did it here in the States.
I know. I wonder how many countries. I wonder what the protocol is.
Oh, there's a lot of really fun ones. A lot of countries do it to their own flag as well. Guam, I know, does it, but they also to, like, I believe the American flag.
Well, I wonder in, like, school, like, if they all stand up in school in the same way and do the their Pledge of Allegiance. And think about those words solo. Their Pledge of Allegiance.
Sounds like the conspiracy cast is getting on their way here at Lab B. Just itching. It's oozing out.
I know. Not even on purpose. But I was really, I'm really curious. Like, what would be, I just wouldn't feel right wearing an American flag on me. And because I don't feel like I'm fighting for my country in the octagon.
But would you put it on a pole and carry it around like on a pole?
Mm-mm. But I'd carry a 2x4 like Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
No, hey, that's heavy duty.
But I think he ended up with both eventually. Didn't he end up with a flag exactly. And a hacksaw?
You win-win. Win-win.
But some of the fighters, I really enjoy it, and I expect to see it on them. Like,
right, so if a Russian fighter came in with a
flag? I have, yeah. It's
or a
kind
Polish
of,
fighter?
Or a Cuban. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I don't even...
Think too, because it is... That's what a lot of fighters from a lot of other countries come in and saying, I want to represent my people, my nation, in the best way possible.
You know why I wouldn't? To me, it would be a bad omen, because in America, there is only one time we drape our American flag over something. And I wouldn't want that to be me going into a fight. You know what I mean?
Kind of. It's done in a different way, for sure. But yeah, I know, I could see that still that there's a correlation there potentially.
Well,
that's
isn't
right,
it kind
if it's on a pole and you're hanging on it, it's
that's
not
better.
Draped over
you'd
it.
Have so you wouldn't that's have it draped. Sense. You'd have it on a pole.
No. But yeah, and it's due to that religious book I had to read on the military statutes, UCMJ, 2.739, whatever. Blah. But you know what we're all here for.
Well, I think it's a perfect time to be talking about it, because we are talking about a main card and a main event with Mr. America himself.
In the Philippines, this is going to be one of those missed opportunities, though, when you have All-American Cowboy Cerrone against Leon UK Edwards. It's kind of like, well, you couldn't get any Filipino fighter, any, even a guy who's going to lose, just get him in there. Get him in the main event somehow.
You guys don't have a CM Punk in the Philippines?
Manny Pacquiao didn't want to fight in MMA?
They couldn't afford him, let's be real.
Yeah, this is very true. They could not afford him.
They can't
him.
Even get Conor back. They cannot get Manny.
I feel like Manny's actually even said, like, no, I'm a boxer. I'm not going to get in there. He's too old. He's too old for that. TRT only goes so far. So, any last little bits that we got in here? We covered Antonia, the contender series.
I don't know if there's any ruckus going on. I don't know if there's any ruckus going on out there. I know you said a fight fell out, and then you were talking about Antonia, and I was like, what happened? I was like thinking Dillashaw and Cody.
Nope.
Or...
nope, Tuesday night with contender series.
Steve ADC.
They, by being on the UFC network... it's the UFC to me. I mean, these are UFC caliber or middle line fighters, where I think some of these fighters, both of the fighters get picked up at times. I've seen such high level in there.
Do we know when the ESPN thing starts officially?
Not off the top of my head.
Because Ariel is trying to get me to get the ESPN. Oh, and did you see your biggest dream came true?
What you were speculating with Luke.
Luke Thomas taking over the MMA hour.
Yeah. Oh, now, unfortunately, I'm not going to be listening to the MMA hour. So, well, I'm going to give it a try. I can't be that much of a hater, because I will give it a try. It's a time slot that I didn't realize that even I pick it up later on a podcast. It's still 5 hours that consumes my week that I listen to breakdowns, find out information, stuff that helps me betting-wise. It is research, and not having a week, Ariel and MMA Fighting actually posted previous interviews of that time slot because they were seeing Twitter blowing up like, I'm waiting for my MMA, like shops of dudes like, hey guys, what's your plan? Because there's hundreds of thousands of people that will tune in, or thousands at that time slot that they've carved out and they're getting away from right now. Lab, be here, not letting you down.
But aren't you curious to see if they keep Rick? And then Rick's chemistry with Luke, which is totally new because Rick never sits at the table.
Are they keeping Rick?
I don't know. I don't know why they wouldn't.
Bring in somebody else.
I don't know why they wouldn't keep Rick. He's doing his job. You know, he still has his job. I don't know why he'd get fired from his producing gig or whatever his on mic slash production.
That's what he said specifically. Like, he does have an outside job outside of the...
I'm actually curious. Doing. I feel like I've seen everybody with Ariel. I know how that relationship is. I know what's going on. The only thing I'm curious about is Ariel with Chael. But with Luke, I'm actually interested to see what the fighters' response to him is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Different than Ariel. And if the questions will be different. I have a hidden suspicion that Luke Thomas is a hidden hothead. And he's going to have it brought out on the show. Like, he always plays really calm, but I see a hothead in there. I see a fucking guy that goes livid.
Even though Ariel could get under my skin at times, his professionalism has always been superb. And you don't realize how professional he is until somebody else takes his place. And here at Labby, it sounds like we're making a prediction that there's going to be some rough patches.
Yeah, I think Ariel's going to have some rough patches because he's not going to be able to conduct the same kind of interviews with somebody who's also trying to sell a fight.
Yep.
Like, Chael's still trying to sell a fight. Chael needs to, and that's going to be happening. Chael will be playing that character as long as he's still in Bellator. And not that Chael doesn't have great questions. I'm interested in Chael interviewing with fighters because there's a different edge that Chael has even than Joe Rogan with how many times he's been inside the octagon, and he's also has an outside persona, which a lot of the guys that are legends have no outside the octagon persona, and that is kind of today. I don't know. It is a world we are in with MMA right now. It's crazy. I never thought it'd change, and then all of a sudden everything's creates a vacuum.
It does, and here we are filling some of that
through the
space.
Vacuum of space, like, ah!
So, with all that riveting podcast talk, we're going to get into the
down and dirty. So we've conspiracied, and we've podcasted. Is there any other fight stuff going on?
Always the LFA, KSW.
Okay, let's talk about exactly. UFC Singapore.
We have a Friday night showdown, Saturday morning hoedown. This is going to be 12 bouts. We're coming from the Philippines itself. You might not be able to chew gum in town, but you can definitely kick some ass. We're going to start from the bottom of the top here at Lab B, and it's going to go with Janelle Lauza coming in twice in the UFC already against Yuka Sasaki, who's coming in off of a loss. As well, 20-5 Sasaki against the 7-4 Lauza has lost his last two fights in the UFC, and they were by decision.
Why is my first fight of the night Melinda Fabian versus Ji-Yeon Kim?
I am not seeing...
Do you have to refresh?
You're not on the right card.
Am I not?
Yeah, I think you might have clicked something wrong.
Isn't UFC Singapore Cowboy Cerrone versus Edwards?
Correct.
I'm on the right card. My first fight of the night is Melinda Fabian versus Ji-Yeon Kim.
I don't even have that fight posted unless it got put on super late notice.
My dad would say wrong again, toilet breath. Oh, shit. Yeah, I don't know. It's not a really exciting fight if you blew past it. I don't think it's any... I have Kim's submission round one. And I'm going to stay away from it. Because, I mean, Kim's set up for a win. But Melinda Fabian, who is she? Who's Melinda Fabian? This lady, I don't even know if she's ever even fought in the U. Oh, she has. She's fought Deanna Bennett, and she lost by a majority decision, but it looked, or it went to a draw, something, and then she's lost by submission, lost by submission. Kim knows how to submit someone. I think it's set up for the South Korean. That's all I have to say about that fight. The other lady, I don't even know. That's rude, but whatever.
So this is going to be a short notice fight. This sprung up on me. I don't know how I ended up somehow not refreshing. Yeah. Here at Lat B, we like to stay away from the first fight of the night. And this is a prime example of why you're going to stay away from that first fight of the night. Both of them, they're going to keep getting fights, win or loss, lose. I'm going to end up going with Kim as well. Decision. We have seen her once in there, though. Twice, actually. She lost, or she won a split decision 4 months ago. I believe she's got a high output and likes to key out a lot. I'm staying away from that son of a gun. I got Kim decision as well.
I'm going to change it to submission round two, just because I'm going to cut the difference from round one, since you go with decision, but I still think it's a finish. Set up finish for as close as they're getting to a hometown.
Totally a good point.
But stay away from that fight.
Definitely.
Because if it goes to decision, by the second and third round, there's going to be no output from either woman. It's going to be like on the ground, tussle back and forth. Anyway, Lausa versus Sasaki. That's where you were. It's almost like I took the air out of the balloon by even mentioning that fight. I should have just let it go.
Fabiana is a 7,800 versus Kim's 8,400. Stay away on DraftKings as well. Don't put that anywhere. Both of them have an average point of 47 for Kim and 34 for Fabiana. It's good. Yeah. If you see the... No, stay away. As we were saying, though, Lauza, Yutka Sasaki, both of these guys have fought. Sasaki's getting a win and a loss alternating in there now, losing his debut against Hayes as well. The 28-year-old is good on the ground. Lauza tends to be the boxer a lot more, always mimicked Manny Pacquiao. He says is one of his favorite boxers of all time. I really bring that up because in the takedowns, I really like Lauza's crisp striking, but you can see where he's getting outplayed because he's not well-rounded enough to be a well-rounded MMA fighter. He is going to be the better stander or striker in there. Sasaki gets hit a lot more than I like at any point in time, and Sasaki really does well on the ground. Tends to make most of his money there and has been beat up a lot of fights that he actually came back and won, specifically that Scoggins fight. He was getting all sorts of beat up and ended up really getting to the ground. And even the other guys he's put in on the ground, Sasaki has been able to outposition him. I think it's about 4-1 positionally once he gets to the ground. I think Lauza can get taken down. It was proven in his last fights. And once he gets there, he can be held down. I'm going to go Sasaki decision. He's a bigger favorite than he should be here. In my eyes, I think Lauza, especially being the hometown boy, we know this is going to be in the Philippines. It's going to be a squeaky-ass hard one, but I think Lauza needs to stay on the regional scene. Just, we haven't seen him develop enough. How do you feel this one goes down?
I don't know why. I'm just feeling Sasaki chinny. And Lauza has a better chin, and that's all this boils down to me. The guys that Bibliotov... Losing against a wrestler like that isn't so bad to me when you make it to decision. Uh-huh. So I think he can stay off the ground with Sasaki. Sasaki tends to like to stand up too. And so if Lauza wants to stay there, I think the guys will stand and blow, and whoever has a better chin wins. And so I'm going to go with Lauza KO round three.
I like that. I think that that's a fair play. Lausa's boxing is really, really, really good, and it's underrated. The thing is, I think he is limited in that specific space. And Sasaki does get hurt a lot in his punch. He wears it not well either. He's always cut up. Moving on to the 125ers.
I know, I'm always waiting for him to get knocked out.
It's true. Like a guy that gets holds on by a thread. And, yeah, squirms it out. But on to the flyweights, 125 pounds. We have Matt Schnell versus Naoki Inoue. Inoue is a young 21-year-old. Being 11-0, coming in his debut and beating Carlos de Thomas, who was 8-0, a Filipino fighter over a year ago. Matt Schnell, being 11-4, has gotten his losses on the Ultimate Fighter show and in the UFC only. Definitely against Hector Sandoval, TKO, but his last win coming up over Beltran in the decision. Snell, being 28, is starting to finally come into his own. Now that he's been off of the UFC fighter show, he understands. I think he's fitting into his body a whole lot more. He's really starting to get into his prime years, which is at 29 to like 32 years old for fighters. In my point of view, where Naoki beating Thomas was not that big of a showing, because if you look back at Thomas, he was fighting, that 8-0 record was against guys that were not that good at all either, and he really showed on the ground how he could overwhelm him. I believe it was only like a 15-30 second fight. It was a pretty quick submission for against Thomas. No, it was a decision. I'm thinking of a fighter later on the fight. Either way, Thomas and him ended up both gassing pretty good. I think Schnell has had way more experience with way higher caliber fighters, is going to come in, and I'm just worried about the jet lag potentially in this one, but I do think that anyway is can get out ground, and we have seen Schnell use his wrestling before to grind out fights. I got decision earlier. I had anyway probably submitting this because on the ground he's known as a phenom, but I think the UFC quality fighters, is this is the first real test he's going to get. And make it or break it. And I think Schnell can actually grind out a 29-28 decision here. How do you feel this one goes down?
I have Inoue decision. And I hate to say this, but Matt Schnell is just a guy on highlight reels as being a guy that is knocked out by guys that don't tend to be knockout artists. I have a decision, but I could change it to a knockout. It's not because I know so much about Naoki. It's really just because I'm not feeling Schnell as UFC caliber. So I'll probably stay away from this altogether.
So the underdog is Schnell at plus 165. Earlier in the card, who do we have as well? Lauza. You picked at a plus 250. Wow, that's a big underdog you got going on there.
It is.
That's a fun one, though, if that one comes through. Put that one on a parlay. For the fight on DraftKings, Inoue is 8,900 against Snell's 7,300. A finish has to come for that close to 8-9.
I agree, and I don't see a finish coming from for Inoue. I have Inoue decision.
And for 7-3, I think Schnell can actually hold position and get takedowns in there.
And he is that top team.
Yeah. This is a
true
test.
He is probably, like, you know, probably warming up with Amanda Nunes and stuff.
I do believe...
He isn't. He's in Shreveport top team.
Inoue, though, is training with legit Japanese fighters. I do remember a bit of his... credentials where he's training with guys that have performed in Bellator.
This
and
card, honestly, this might be the lowest card of the year.
It's the time slot. It's the time slot. It's gonna be rough. I mean, it's gonna start on the East Coast at 4:30 a.m. The main card. I mean, it's gonna be like a 2 a.m. start.
The main card starts at 4:30. No, the prelims, I think, might start at 4:30. I think the main card starts at like 8 a.m. or some shit.
Oh, the Saturday. So this isn't even a Friday night fight. This is a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
4:30 a.m. is what it's saying. It's a time slot. Woo!
Yeah. 4:30 a.m. is what time the prelims start?
The prelims start on
Fight Eastern Pass. Standard Time in America. Look at your listings.
Right, if you're on the West Coast, it's going to be like 1 a.m. So, on to the strawweight division. We have Yuxian Yan versus Viviana Pereira. Both of these ladies have fought in the UFC before. 8-1. Yan is coming out of that China scene against Pereira, who is 13-1, getting her first loss 7 months ago to Titiana Suarez, who's on a big hype train, but beating Jamie Moa before that. Also, Valerie Letourneau in a split decision. This 5'1" fighter is always outsized, but She looks like a little pit bull. She's got traps. She's got good, better-ish cardio. Puts her heads down and moves forward. Definitely gasses her opponents and can eke out decisions in there. Jan, having her debut against Caitlin Curran decision 6 months ago, beating Caitlin Curran, who is no longer in the UFC, went in, or who had a, Caitlin Curran, I believe, had a 1-6 record. 7 fights in the UFC and she won one of those fights. So that's the caliber of Caitlin Curran.
And Jan won the
decision. Exactly. So I think this is easily set up. I feel like Pereira moving forward, she has good takedown defense. Jan likes to keep it striking as well. Tends to be a karate striker. I believe she makes a lot of hya-hya noises, has a good output, but can get hit. I remember her eyes swelling up a lot. She, though, I like in Jan, is she throws 5-punch combinations on a regular. Even if there's no power behind them, when she decides to go, she can go well. What I think the major factor in this fight's going to be is going to be once Pereira's like, okay, I can hit her twice for every time she hits me 5 times. I'm going to take her down when she moves straight forward on me, where Kern at times had such weak takedowns that she would try to take down Jan, and the forward pressure was able to stop that. I got Pereira getting a nasty, dirty split. I think I got an underdog here in the younger fighter by 5 years, 24-year-old Viviana, the Suruki against Fury of Jan will come through. Who do you got in this one?
I got Pereira pretty easily, and my deciding factor is that Tatiana Suarez, I believe, is next level and the one to watch at the 115 division, and so going decision with her is the biggest deal that either of these women have going on. So I think Pereira could eke out a little finish, or I think a decisive decision. I think she's going to be better all around. Pereira.
So Pereira is a minus 165 against Jan's plus 145. On DraftKings, 8,800 for Pereira against a 7,400 for Jan. Ooh, I'm not liking Jan in that. And for 8-8, seeing a decision, no. Yeah, I'm going to end up getting a big fat stay away to that one for sure. Moving on to the welterweight division, we have Jake Matthews coming in against Shinzo Anzai, the animal himself, 10-2. Anzai's coming in off of a 2-fight winning streak. 32-year-old just beat Jim Luke and Roger Zabata, but has lost to Alberto Mino in a TKO against Jake Matthews, 13-3. Jake Matthews is also coming in off a 2-fight winning streak, last beating Jin Li Liang in a decision where he got his eyes almost ripped out of his face. And also beating Jan Blakovic, who in a split decision, who I bet against Jake Matthews in that spot. Jake Matthews also losing to the likes of Kevin Lee and Andrew Holbrook. Jake Matthews, definitely juicing. Is he fighting in the United States? No, he's fighting in Asia. Weird. I wonder how the testing's going to be in Asia. Just throwing these kind of weird conspiracies out.
But don't they,
out.
To stay in the UFC, do they have to get tested by USADA, or only tested by USADA if they fight in America? Like, do we not know
American
all these
sanctioning.
Tiny little rules going on? Like, is there so many little weird holes to contract?
I just think the UFC doesn't talk about it. It's like, we just do our own thing. People can find it out. But it's, yes, there is reasons why there is only certain fighters that fight in certain parts of the world. That's not been a unfounded conspiracy here at Lappy. I feel like we've been pretty heavy on that. And it's worked out for us most of the time. The Philippines got some crazy laws, though. Don't they have a town where you can't chew gum because if you spit on the ground, they're going to hang you or something like that? Am I making that up? Am I jumping?
I don't know anything about that.
They lock you. Yeah, like you cannot, I believe in the capital.
But I don't chew gum.
Ooh.
So I don't look up the gum laws. I'm all on places like, where is it safe to be gay? It's like I always wanted to see the pyramids, but Morocco does not seem very friendly. To
so we can't go to Morocco.
Yeah, I don't
or
know.
Or the Middle East for our tour. Gosh.
Maybe some places will be welcoming, but I do not think Egypt is one of those places.
In time.
Yeah.
So Jake Matthews, definitely likes to use his wrestling to overwhelm his opponents. Showed it against Jin Li Yang, who a lot of people had as the favorite in that fight due to the wrestling. Matthews is still a young man growing into his 23-year-old body. He's definitely using every supplement he can. Feeling out at the 170 division really, really well. I think he could go to 85 very soon as well. We have to watch that cut. And Antai is actually a small 170er. He's one of those Japanese fighters who doesn't cut much, but is fairly shredded, and he's that cork. Like, you could see that he's dense. Very, very dense guy. Likes to use his wrestling as well to win a lot of decisions. Anzai is a very limited striker. Very, very limited. Has power in his strikes, but at best puts together two-punch combinations, and it's usually an overhand right coming over that top. Jake Matthews is definitely going to be the better striker here. And on the ground, I think Jake Matthews can potentially gas a bit more than Anzai. Anzai tends to make it grindier, and what we saw last with Matthews, I think he was ready for that with Jin Liang, so we could see him making a bigger turn. I got Matthews' decision. I think this is going to be closer than people think. I think Matthews is a big favorite here, and he shouldn't be. I'm going with a decision. I don't think the finish comes. How do you feel this one finishes by the end of the night?
Matthews isn't really a finisher, and I don't think he's going to have some huge advantage on the ground to be able to submit Anzai. A little known fact about Anzai is they actually call him the Japanese Yoel Romero.
Interesting.
Totally made it up, but you guys all use that when you're watching this fight with friends and watch them spread it on, because they'll be like, oh, I can totally see that. I have Matthew's decision. I think this is going to be a boring fight.
So are you telling me that minus 525 Jake Matthews is something you're not going to put money on?
No.
Yeah, I agree. That's way too inflated. 2-1, 3-1, but 5-1, that is crazy. 9,400 on DraftKings for Matthews against 6,800 for Anzai. I could actually see a wager gauger on 6-8 in a decision fight.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. And then you could put on a bunch of beasts.
Then you can definitely load it up.
If there are any beasts on this card.
It's actually pretty interesting how the night's going to end up going around. And we're going to stay in the welterweight division with Hector Aldana versus Kian Song. Aldana's coming in with a 4-0 record, getting his first loss ever in his 4-0 record off the UFC show, so it doesn't count over 3 years ago, to Enrique Martins. So he's been out of the scene for 3 years, Aldana has been, and he's 29 years old. I don't know why he takes such a long break, if it was injuries, work, or both. Against Ki Song, he's a 13-4 fighter coming out of China, last beating Bobby Nash in 15 seconds, has lost a few fights in the Road FC and China Circuit against Brad Riddle, who is a Bellator type of fighter over a year ago. But definitely, we can't base Song's last fight off of that, because his strike statistics were 15 strikes landed in 15 seconds against Bobby Nash. But Bobby Nash is so chinny that the first shot hurt him, and then Song's every other punch landed subsequently. So I don't think that's going to happen, but Aldana, 3-year layaway, I haven't seen much about his camps. I haven't kept up enough around with him, and this is just a clear stay away because both fighters have such limited information. I remember watching Aldana a long, long time ago, but 3 years is so long, and in a sport that's moving as fast as ours is, it could be devastating. But I do know that once you're in the UFC circuit, doors open up, and he could have got picked up by a much better team than Tapology has placed here, and he could be, for all we know, at AKA or American Top Team. I'm going to end up going Song decision, just because we got a Mexican fighter going all the way to fight in the Philippines at 4 a.m. The travel, it's going to be a decision. I'm going to probably stay away due to the limited actual fight time. And if I'm thinking correctly, I do think that Song, or there's another fighter. It's Yadong Song. Never mind. On the same night. We got Yadong Song later on. So how do you feel this one's going to go?
I think Keenan Song is chinny. I think he might be a little overrated. And I think Aldana can clip him in round two and knock his ass out. Because I just think Mexicans are fighting more on the street than Keenan Song it has taken. And he gets not. He seems chinny. He seems chinny to me. So I just think Hector Aldana can catch him. I got Aldana KO round two.
I feel like you are bringing it in hot with the picks coming in at...
I got nothing to lose. It's going to be 4:30 in the morning.
Song coming in at 9,100 on DraftKings against the 7,100 in Aldana. If we both think a decision's in that fight, that 7-1 might pay off, but limited statistics for Aldana there, so it is close. Song being the -280 favorite betting lines. Aldana +240. I could see you two parlay two people up there. You're making money moves. I don't know if I'm in there with you. There's some big underdogs you got, but you put out good points at paths of victory that they have, and they are legitimate paths of victory. On to the featherweights, though. We have Rolando Divers, Shane Young. 11-4, Shane Young lost his debut against Alexander Volkanovski in a unanimous decision 7 months ago against Dyes, 9-6. Dye beat Willie Bjorn, a decision 6 months ago, I believe on another Asia card, but lost to Torrento Ishihara in a decision, and Caceres TKO over a year ago. Dai really saved his career in his last fight against Buren in a decision, and he squeaked out that, I feel like, in a decision. Cardio, limited, has good striking. His takedown defense is held up against not good takedown guys, and it's tough as nails. Ate some head kicks and shots at times that other guys didn't, and pressed forward. I think Young, though, at 11-4 coming out of New Zealand, the 24-year-old has dedicated his life to, I remember listening to a lot of stuff, a lot of good guys really like him, but when you're coming in against Volkanovski, who's a straight contender up to that top 145-pound division, Young came in to be a sacrificial lamb, and I really remember saying, Young's going to be someone to bet on later on, and this is one of those times. I definitely think Young's better all the way around, striking, on the ground, and even cardio-wise. It's shown he can take a beating, and Dai doesn't really have... He has knockout power, but it's been on the regional scenes at best. I have a decision, Young. I'm thinking I might move to a submission, round number three. I like Young's guard from his back. He does a lot of that 10th Planet stuff. I know he's not affiliated, but you will see the correlation once you see this guy on the ground. How do you feel this one goes?
I have Young all the way around here, and I'm surprised that everybody doesn't have a finish. I think he should be one of the more expensive guys of the night. I have no idea what the scores are in DraftKings, but I think Young can overwhelm him. And then instead of throwing a million punches and burning himself out, he has great submission, so he won't even have to. I think he hurts him enough to get a clean submission. And I could see it in round one, but I'm tentative, so I put it in round two. I'm not tentative anywhere that he will lose this fight at all, just when is he going to finish. Rolando Dye, like a lot of other fighters on this card, and I hate to say it, they're not quite UFC caliber, but guys like Shane Young need things for their highlight reel, and this will be one of those fights. Shane Young is one to watch. I think jump on this kid's hype train, and if you're watching at 4:30 in the morning, you'll be the first. You'll be like, I liked him way back at Singapore at 4:30 in the morning.
So the betting favorite, -165 for Young against the +145 Dye. Also DraftKings, 8,700 for Young against the 7,500. For 8,700, that's one of these guys that I do feel is going to be able to get in that 50, if not 80, 90 points. On to the bantamweight division, we have Felipe Arantes versus Yedong Song. I think I got a couple songs mixed up there. But Yedong Song got me going crazy. Coming out of America.
It sounded like it was like the thong song with a little Latin flavor. Like I heard little horns in it, like dee 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 dee. Dee 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 dee. It was commando style.
It was. Thank you. Thank you. Making me feel good about it. So, Felipe Arantes has been around for a while. 18-9, the record for the 30-year-old against the China Yadong Song, coming in with a 12-4 record, getting a debut win submission against Bharat Kandare, who was an Indian fighter who was all power, limited wrestling. Yadong Song won via front choke once Kandare gassed out. Yadong Song has been an alpha male. Alpha male had a China contingent, so did Winklejohn, and the UFC actively has put Chinese fighters in the States to get them better. And Uriah Faber was just specifically saying, Yadong Song's a beast. He's in there, gets after it, has that good mentality, does all that good stuff, and has really taken, adhered to the Team Alpha Male good work ethic. They've always come in with a good gas tank, and his wrestling is finally getting on point. He has power in his hands. Yadong Song is looking up, if you know what I mean. I like the guy. Definitely a young fighter. At 20 years old, he's going to grow so much in so many fights. Kandare was not a UFC fighter caliber, but in those alpha male gyms, he does have UFC quality fighters that he's competing with, so he is getting those rounds in. But in this situation, Felipe Arantes, coming off of a two-fight losing streak as of late to Josh Emmett 7 months ago, and then a split decision to Eric Perez. We know Perez is an ultra weasel and always finds a way to win, even though he gets finished many, many times, or knocked down in there. Felipe Arantes is coming into his own. Perfect timing. He's 28-32. I feel like Arantes is bringing it all the way around forward. Arantes doesn't have as much power as Yadong Song, but I think he has serviceable enough striking to finally get it to the ground when he needs to. And on the ground, Arantes, I do think, is leaps and bounds better. Yadong's getting way better at his wrestling, but give him another couple years where Arantes has already done that. I'm going with Arantes. I flip-flopped a few times already on this. I do think Arantes is the overall better fighter. I'm going with an upset, I believe, here in Arantes. And maybe not as much of an upset as I'm thinking. Arantes, the minus 120 favorite. This is as close to a coin flip as you can get. I'm sure it's going to be minus 115 by the time the line finally breaks.
I got to hope with Arantes' ground game, and everyone knows what's coming out of Brazil, that Alpha Male prepared Yadong Song for this.
Mm-hmm.
I have Song decision. I do think he will win the decision, and this will be the online hullabaloo of no way, those judges are blind, blah, 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 because I do see Arantes really winning. I just don't think he's going to get the local thing. Yadong Song is the other great thing about him is coming out of China. We need some Chinese superstars. I think this kid might be one. I have Song decision, and right now this is like in my contingent for fight of the night.
Wow.
I think this is going to be a really good fight.
I like it. I do think that this is actually a way funner fight, but the odds do reflect that. A minus 120 favorite is nothing. Nothing betting-wise. Again, fractions. Fractions back. On to the co... actually, this is the preliminary headlining bout before we get to the main card. We have Pierre Yan at bantamweight against...
Pierre Yan, his fight a year and 2 months ago was against a guy that if it was an American name, but it's like a Russian name, but if it was an American name, his name would be John Johnson. Look at the guy that he beat. Magomed Magomedov. Like, hi, I'm John Johnson.
Oh, that was, okay, in the ABC, the year, the one before that.
Yeah.
Magomed.
Anyway, sorry.
A lot of people have been hyped on Jan. A lot of people have been waiting for him at 25 to come in. The Russian fighter definitely has a Tiger Muay Thai background. Tiger Muay Thai has always shown that they got killers out of there. Roger Huerta has been the head coach. Mike Swick, they got a lot of UFC caliber fighters out there. Tarantu Ishihara, also coming out of that alpha male contingency, we know what he likes to do in there. And this is one of the fighters who has lost to Artem Lobov, the 10-5-2 fighter. Ishihara gasses. has a hard left hand, but if Taranto does not get you out of there in that first round, you're fucking riding out a sweaty ass fight if you bet on this young man. I haven't seen it. Heard his last win of his last four is Rolando Dye, who we were just crapping all over earlier in this fight card. Prior to that, he lost to Gray Maynard, which he was a 5-1 favorite. I'm never going to forget the takedown clinic, so everybody knows what to do to beat Taranto Ishihara. Take him down, wear him out, and he will just not be able to beat you with his striking. Jan can do that, especially with that Russian wrestling. Once Jan is on top as well, he loves the ground and pound, always moving, has an unmatched gas tank. It's been proven time and time again. The 8-1 fighter has a lot of good hype for good reason. He swarms people. This is one of those guys that when your friends are like, who is this guy? You're going to be like, oh, he's a little beast. Just wait and watch this fight. I kind of think that Ishihara has more of a name that's affecting him negatively more than anything, because they're using him more as a stepping stone now, and it's going to show in this fight. I got Jan. Heavy decision, if not a finish, against Ishihara. I think a lot of people see that coming as well.
Me too.
He's been figured out.
I'm one of those people. I see that exact same thing, and I think you said it, like, everything about that. Jan decision.
So, Jan is a minus 475 debut
fighter. Even down
fighter.
To Ishihara just being a stepping stone, and the only time we see him anymore is really on these cards.
Because he can transfer that hype to somebody else. He can give it away, give it away, give it away now.
I think they call it that rub. He gives him that rub.
Right, exactly. So, on DraftKings, it's going to end up being 9,300 against 6,900 Ishihara. I'm not going to put Ishihara anywhere. I might sprinkle on Jan a little bit. I might Jan it up a little bit. So, on to the main event. We're starting off the main card at the welterweight limit. We have other fighters in Jin Liang versus Dache Abe, a Japanese fighter against the China fighter. Is it one of those things where I love how they bring Asian fighters, because Americans are like, oh yeah, it's a bunch of Asian guys. But if you were to ask any of these guys, they're like from completely different parts of the world. I don't know. Is it like, am I overthinking it?
I actually wasn't even looking, and I thought Abe was
Filipino.
Latin of some sort.
Interesting.
Just by the picture on here. But I had no question on where Jin Liang was from.
I would agree with that. You know that he is definitely...
He looks like a picture that you would see of a Chinese person, like drawn up of like a World War II high general. Like, he looks like a scary...
He does, like, look very intimidating.
Yeah.
The Leech is definitely a very fitting name as well. We definitely have, like... Jin Liang had him beating Matthews and actually had one of the most disgraceful, blatant eye gouges we've ever seen.
Disgraceful. It was.
It was gnarly as hell. You got to be a little more subtle. Brian Caraway did fish Hokomofo, and we did see Chad Mendes also somewhat eye gouging Conor McGregor, the untouchable. But Abe is 6-1, who got his first loss to Jim Liu 4 months ago, beat a South Korean fighter. Definitely likes to keep it striking, boxes up well, has an okay gas tank, and his wrestling defense is okay on the ground. He's serviceable, but doesn't have tons of finishes, more just can ward away submissions more than put people in submission trouble. And against Jin Liang, he's a good enough of a submission guy. He's been in there with the top guys that, you know, if he's got a Pokemofo in the eye, he's willing
to
do it.
He'll do what he's
got
to do.
He'll do it. So, hey, guess what?
If he ain't cheating, he ain't trying. His book.
It's the truth. That's the truth. Jin Liang, though, I see him getting way better takedowns. He throws tons of weight into his punches where he knocks himself off balance because he wings them a lot. But it's because on the ground, Jin Liang is so confident that he's not worried about the ground game. I do think if it gets to the ground, it's a matter of time till Jin Liang submits. If not, a 30-27 decision. I just think Abe Abe is outmatched all the way around here. Outclassed. There's levels of this game. Jin Liang is that next level. Jake Matthews, that level. Abe, he's getting there. Still a young fighter. How do you feel this one finishes?
I have Jin Liang decision because he only knocks out guys that are chinny.
Good call.
And I don't think it's going to be a lot of output because I think he's going to be super gassed by round two. So I think this is going to be a boring fight. And it could be really close. It could be a dirty split.
Whoa.
I think Jin Liang is going to, he's going to be overpriced on this. I know he is a knockout guy, but he only knocks out guys that tend to get knocked out all the time. So I think Abe has an okay chin and he can wear out a decision and it could be ugly, but I think Jin Liang, it gets it out of his fame. He gets the fame decision.
Jin Liang, 9,200 on DraftKings against the 7,000. Abe, that's a little much for Jin Liang. I do think it's a decision as well. Betting-wise, you're going to have to pay -340, 3-1 favorite, Jin Liang. I do think it's granted, but I also see a decision there. There's no value there at all, especially on Abe. I don't think many people see a finish anywhere in his future. On to the 25-pound division, flyweights, we have another lady fight. We have Jessica Rose Clark versus Jessica I. Do I even need to break this down?
For all intents and purposes, these next three fights, though, they're kind of... They're caliber enough to be on any card at any time. These next three.
So, the reason I'm being a little somewhat facetious is just because you know we're going to probably be lopsided against Jessica I. Because you know how we feel here at Lat B. Thinking that she's the bottom of the rung, unfortunately. And I don't mean to sound like an asshole, because I'm sure I do, because she is a UFC fighter. But with everything and all the crap we've talked before, Jessica I gives up in fights and gasses.
I think she blocked us because we, on the podcast, talked about her losing to Betch Kohea and how we feel about that. And I, because I've racked my brain what we've said bad, and I think we've been like, she lost to Betch Kohea.
Yeah, and if you lose to Betch, you don't deserve to be in the UFC. And, like, at all. So, Jess Rose Clark, 9-4, coming in again in a 3-fight winning. She came in and did she won her debut against Beck Rawlings and then beat Paige VanZant. So, not the highest caliber fighter as well, but I would say those are higher than Jessica I, potentially. Jessica I loses to Misha Tate, Juliana Pena, Sarah McMahon, and Betch Kohea, getting her last win against Faria in a split decision. She really ground out that dirty-ass split. And Rose Clark, I've been following. She's posting a lot of stuff. Jessica I keeps that. We know what we're going to get with her. She likes to get takedowns, but eventually gasses. Striking, she can get outstruck. Tough as shit. But her eyes swell up. She wears damage. Not well at all. And on the ground, she can be submitted. Rose Clark off of her back. Not too dangerous. Striking actually has more power than people give her credit. And she has actually knocked out a boyfriend or two before. She's looking all the way better. I think Clark is a step above it, above eyes level. And I think Clark wins a decision. If not, gets a late finish in the third round. I'm liking Clark here. Who do you think ends up winning this fight?
I got a Clark decision going on this, and I just think every minute that goes by in this fight, it gets more and more boring. I got Jessica Rose Clark decision. Whatever, Jessica, I don't even care. I hope that it's all rub. I also think Jessica, I'll miss weight.
Woo! Damn, throwing that shade. Throwing that shade. So, Jessica I, 7,700 on DraftKings again, 8,500 for Rose Clark. Also an underdog there. Rose Clark being -130.
I'm just such a lady with an angel miss weight.
So, we both got Clark here. I think most other people do. They see what we're seeing. It's nothing new. On to the co-main event, though. We have a 205-pound, the heaviest men around in the Philippines. These guys are definitely going to be the biggest thing you see for miles. Tyson Pedro coming against O Vincent, Saint, Prue, 22-11, longtime 35-year-old veteran, is in the twilight of his career, coming off of a submission guillotine, standing guillotine choke against Amir Latifi that we here at Lappy both called as an underdog and witnessed in real life. OSP went dead body on in there. He went dead body, yeah. But before that dead body, he got hit with an overhand right that would have put most other men down in there. OSP did go 5 rounds with John Jones. OSP does gas. OSP has a hard left kick, hard body left kick as well. And on the ground has been ultra sneaky, getting calf slicers in there, as well as the OSP Von Flu choke. He's done it to enough people that if somebody leaves their arm up there, he will grab it. Tyson Pedro is coming in with a 7-1 record. His only loss to Amir Latifi. They share a loss and a decision there. And last coming in against a short notice submission Kimura 4 months ago. But Pedro, I do feel that Latifi showed where there's levels to grappling and wrestling, and Latifi has that level of grappling, and other UFC fighters have that. I do think OSP has that as well as the striking. Pedro really has underwhelmed me in the striking. He gets hit a lot, and with his shots on the ground, when his double leg takedowns to get to the ground for Pedro were really bad, and it really showed a lot against Latifi, especially because he was so much shorter. OSP is definitely scaring me. I haven't liked them. I've probably bet against OSP more than I've bet on, but OSP striking is better. It's that gas tank that always worries me, but OSP has that type of power that will finish you in the third round even if he's gassed and tired. I think the veteranship here of this 22 fights against John Jones and those caliber of fighters, because it is much higher than Tyson Pedro, is going to come through. Tyson Pedro will hold on to that over the head for that Von Flu choke. Tyson Pedro does that a lot. I went back and watched fights and was like, he submits a lot of guys, but they were all regional, lower level guys. OSP is the biggest step up he's taken by far, just under Latifi, and we saw how heavy of a 30-27 that fight was. I think this is way closer than people have it. I'm going with the underdog. OSP, I don't like it. 8,000 on DraftKings against 8-2 for Pedro. Who do you got in this one?
I got Pedro knockout round one. I've thought OSP was over for a few years now.
Yep.
He only knocks out chinny guys. Tyson Pedro isn't chinny. OSP also has an issue when somebody's reach even comes near to meeting his, and height even comes near to meeting his. Uh-huh. Tyson Pedro is both those things. I think Tyson Pedro has decent takedown defense more than actual takedowns, and I think his strength is going to keep OSP from getting him down. And when OSP is in that 1 and 2 range close up, that's where he's in so much danger, especially of Tyson's Pedro's elbows. OSP will get knocked out. Tyson Pedro can knock someone out. I'm on the Tyson Pedro hype train. This is a big rub. It is his biggest step up, but it's like definitely a name that he needs to cross off the list to put his name into this upper echelon of guys. So I even like the travel time for him. I think this fight is handmade for him, and especially nestled between the names of Jessica I and Cowboy Cerrone. So boom, Tyson and Pedro will be on a lot of my cards.
-125 betting favorite Tyson Pedro against the +105 OSP. The also 8,200 for Pedro. That's I don't know who I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go OSP. I'm gonna put him on a couple, not everything, because that's a sketch ass fight, twilight of his career. On to the main event though, we finally have what we came to watch. This will end up going on 8 or 10 a.m., whatever, your Saturday morning when you're having your coffee for the third cup. 5-rounder at 170 pounds. We have Donald Cerrone, the cowboy himself, against the UK's own Leon Edwards. Edwards coming in with a 5-fight winning streak against top-level 15-3 record, beating Barbarina Sabata as of late in a TKO. Donald Cerrone, at 35 years old, is also in that twilight of his career. We've bet him against him a few times, against Till here, and We actually bet him against Medeiros as well, where he came through 4 months ago and knocked out Yancy Medeiros. Donald Cerrone still shows us why he is the gatekeeper to that top five. If you can be Donald Cerrone, you deserve to be in that belt contender type of status. And that's exactly where Leon Edwards' trajectory has been. This is a humongous step up for him. Donald Cerrone, off of his back, ultra nasty. Striking-wise, we know what he brings with his combinations, highlight series of Super Saiyan knockouts over all sorts of elite competition. Donald Cerrone's last losses have been Darren Till, Robbie Lawler, former champion, and also Jorge Masvidal, TKO. Those are all in that top five level for me as well. Maybe top six with Masvidal. But Leon Edwards, with Barbarina, showed to me that his gas tank was where it needed to be, and that's why I bet against him. Against Luque as well. Leon Edwards, we bet on Luque. We really like him, and I really watched that Luque fight because that's where I think the sport's going. And what really highlighted in that Luque fight, what took all the steam out of Luque, left body kick. And we have seen Donald Cerrone eat a body shot worse, as bad as many people. Again, he's Matt Brown-esque. When people go to the body on Donald Cerrone, he gets finished a lot. Anthony Pettis did it. Masvidal got him with a body shot. Till didn't really do that, but that's a different level of striker. I do think that's going to play a role. I do think Leon Edwards, it shows that's in his repertoire, and if I can see it, he can see it as well. Donald Cerrone, though, is somebody that you got to be hella careful in there with. This is a coin flip for me. I don't like the odds with Leon Edwards being 2-1. I think that's way too overinflated. Donald Cerrone will make a dogfight out of anything. I'm going to pick Edwards, but I don't like it. I think that this is a minus 115 coin flip. Donald Cerrone has every single way he can win this fight. Via decision, he has a gas tank. Via the striking, he has that. His chin is still held up somewhat. Medeiros has power and landed, and he did absolutely fine. I think the weight gain definitely has helped that chin. It was the biggest worry that we had of all. I think the Cowboy live, super live dog. I'm not going to put Edwards heavy in there, but I do have a round 4, maybe 5 finish for Edwards. I like the young man. I've loved everything I've seen. Watching his footage coming back and being like, all right, what did he really do in those fights? He filled in every one of his gaps that he was deficient in earlier on in his career, and I really, really like that. How do you feel this one goes down by the end?
What are all the costs of everything?
For Leon Edwards, $8,600 on DraftKings against the $7,600 for Donald Cerrone. And betting-wise, -210 for Leon Edwards against the +175 Donald Cerrone. So Cerrone's the value by far all the way around. I might put some bets on Cerrone just because the odds are off. 2-1 is too much. It's too much.
I disagree with you. Woo! I love Donald, but I don't think he's looked good ever at 170. Yancey is maybe a tweener, but he's more of a 155. I think Robbie Lawler is over. Darren Till is obviously maybe a 185er, but he murked Cowboy. Uh-huh. And then Jorge Masvidal murked him too, because those guys are at 170. Uh-huh. So any guy that's a natural 170 is going to knock out Donald Cerrone, woo! Except for a guy who is kind of done anyway. And I know everybody hates to hear it because they're like, Robbie Lawler. I think Robbie's kind of done. And Cowboy isn't top five to me at all, but Leon Edwards deserves to be. So Leon Edwards, he's going to knock out Cowboy Cerrone. And Cowboy Cerrone afterward is going to be like, oh, well, me and the wife, she's pregnant. We got to go to Singapore on vacation. And it's hard to find a Budweiser around here. You know, it'll be like some kind of, he won't even care. He's going to be like, I felt a little off going into it, you know, like, I wish there was an in-between weight division, like, it'll be all that. So, I got Edwards, and I'm going to put him on everything, and Donald nowhere.
Interesting. I think you have a good point that Edwards is going to be the bigger guy in there. How do you feel the finish comes for Donald, or not for Donald, for Leon Edwards?
Cerrone has a soft body, and then I think he's going to get knocked out. I think it's going to be a body shot that slows him down, and he's going to start carrying himself differently, and he's going to get so busy blocking that body for the second kick that Leon Edwards is going to set it up that he's going to go in with a kick to the body again and hit him with the right hand.
I actually was thinking something along those lines where it was going to be body shot that eventually puts him down. I'm just wondering if it's one of those where I want to make my play on Leon Edwards, if I want to make my play, like, because this is one of those prop bets where you can make way better money on calling it in the third or fourth, which are usually in the plus 1,000 range.
I love Donald. I just think his style, it's of yesteryear.
Yeah, there's a lot of footage for sure on him. But Leon Edwards has definitely had many, many, many fights in the UFC. There's quite a bit of fights. I think he's like had seven or eight fights.
I know it sounds awful and masochistic, but I kind of like the weird timing fight cards once in a while, especially before a big UFC 226 coming up. That is like really, in my fight career that I've ever watched, it might be the best card of all time.
Got a mini Dana White going on with Lesbo here.
It's so good. Every card, it opens with who? Gilbert Burns and I can't even believe I can't.
We can barely get through this one.
I can barely hold these gators down. So, yeah, I guess that's it. Do we have a Leslie Smith underdog pick?
I don't think we agreed with one. I don't think we agreed with one at all as far as underdogs.
It's crazy. It's weird. It's almost like it's jinx now. Come on, Bellator, can you pick up Leslie Smith? We need our Leslie Smith underdog pick back, and Leslie Smith probably wants inside the octagon again.
Or is it one of those things, because here at Lat B, like we've been saying, once you become the champion, we got to get off that train, because we're looking at the people that are coming up that have those direct paths. Should it be the same way? Should it be with the Leslie Smith underdog pick that it's going to be a Darren Elkins, somebody who's always going to take a beating, keep on moving forward, throw 11-1 strikes? I off the top of my head, I'm thinking Darren Elkins is a prime suspect for that.
Oh, I don't know if I can go with the damage. Because I just don't always, I don't ever feel like there was never a time.
Yeah, it's just that one time it really worked out for him.
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
But I get what you're saying.
So if you guys have anything, hit us up on all of our social media platforms.
A suggestion of a fighter that you feel
and fits everybody, the we are working at getting a P.O. box. I know some of you had fan art you wanted to send us, but you can always take a picture of that too, and you can tag us or post it at Instagram, because we have a Lesbo in the Bean over there, and a Twitter and a Facebook, and wherever podcasts aren't sold, you can find us. Thanks for listening again.
Lesbo and the Bean.
Thanks for listening to Lat B. For all things Lesbo and the Bean, head over to lesboandthebean.com or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.